Charlie Worzel's first day as an internet content creator did not get off to the smoothest of starts.
I was like, okay, like crack your knuckles. Like it's time to go and start day one as an entrepreneur.
It was Tuesday, and Charlie had just left a job as an opinion writer at the New York Times to start a newsletter.
The only laptop I had at the time was the New York Times laptop. And I was like, I can get like another like day out of this, you know, and I opened it up and it was just like completely wiped, just like locked, like enter in, you know, administrator passcode. And I was just like,
And his subscribers, many of whom were shelling out $6 a month or $65 a year, were expecting a post.
You know, it's day one. You got to like deliver for these people who are now paying you money to subscribe to, you know, your publication. So I opened up my phone and I just started like, all right, let's blog. Furiously blogging from my phone. So Galaxy Brain is off to a roaring start.
Galaxy Brain is the name of Charlie's newsletter. It comes from this meme with a picture of a brain and a series of expanding thoughts, each one more grandiose and ludicrous than the next. Like a lot of things on the internet, it's a meme about the internet and how it gets into our heads. It's a joke, but it's also sort of not. That duality mirrors Charlie's life right now. He's been thinking and writing about the internet for years, including about how people monetize themselves online in new and different ways. And now he's decided to monetize himself online in a new and different way, leaving traditional media, the New York Times, to write a newsletter for Substack, the latest hot platform.
So I've been doing a lot of reporting in the last couple of months in the Times around like the attention economy and just attention as a subject in general. And that kind of led me to thinking a lot and doing a lot of reporting around creators. And I kind of felt like they were, to some degree, creators are like the canaries in the content mines, right? Like they're sort of like are subject to a lot of these online dynamics that a lot of us are going to be subject to, like normal people. And I wanted to some degree to do this as an experiment because I'm writing about it, like to live in that world as I cover it.
Today on the show, why people like Charlie are walking away from perfectly good jobs and going it alone online. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Over the past few years, I've started to feel like everyone I know has a newsletter. Some are about parenting, some are recommendations for what to read or watch. A lot of them are free, but there are a few that I pay $5 or $6 a month for. And that last part, that people are willing to pay for content that feels personal and considered, is something that Silicon Valley investors have latched onto. Consider Substack, the company that Charlie is publishing his newsletter through. It started in 2017 and is now valued at $650 million. There are thousands of Substack newsletters and reportedly millions of readers. Part of Substack's plan, according to one of its main investors, is that the promise of money and editorial freedom would make people like Charlie jump. I think, honestly, most people listening to this would think giving up a steady job, even if we take the New York Times out of this equation, giving up any steady job with name recognition, health insurance, good benefits to take a gamble on the internet by yourself is bananas. Why did you do it?
I did it because a thing that really happened for me was that a lot of my priorities changed. Mm-hmm. And I started to get really kind of burned out by the news and the news cycle. And I started noticing that the things I was gravitating towards as a writer were like quieter or a little bit like off the news. And I would write those things and I would get this great feedback from people. It would speak to them in some way or start this conversation. And we'd have these great offline conversations and it was difficult to like harness them. And I just felt like that there was something there, that there was this kind of like a yearning for stuff that was a little off the ball. That there's so much just like a deluge of news, right? And what people want is that context, and it's not always fitting that closing, you know, news cycle window frame. And it just felt like chasing audience after a while.
I saw you use that phrase in something that you had written about this. And I guess I understand that impulse, and I'm trying to square it with the idea of then starting a thing on your own, which requires so much work and, you know, to another degree, chasing a different kind of audience, an audience of paying subscribers. Sure. Like, I wonder how you think about that.
I think I was burned out in a specific kind of way of like having to peg things to a very specific conversation. What I'm not burned out of is like building something that I think has like long and sustaining value. Mm. There's this Twitch streamer, Hassan Piker, who I've talked to a bunch. And when I first met him, I went on his stream and, you know, there's like 50,000 people on it. And it's just this crazy like stream of comments, but he has this like Discord channel, and inside it, he and his audience are constantly like basically building out his show every day. Like it is totally collaborative. They're like telling him what they want him to talk about, showing him interesting things, like challenging him. He's challenging them. It's this like very interesting sort of form of audience and like journalist or creator or pundit interaction. And I think that I'm not saying like it's the future of whatever, like, but it's fascinating.
I want to talk about the specifics of Substack for a second, because it feels like it's everywhere. And part of that is it's because it's disrupting our business, the media business. But it's not just that. I mean, one of the biggest stars on Substack is Heather Cox Richardson, who's an historian. What is Substack doing right?
Well, I mean, what they're doing right is also maybe to some degree what they're doing wrong, which is they're kind of staying out of it to some degree, right? So, you know, I didn't take a deal, right? I didn't take any advance.
You didn't take one of these Substack pros where they give you a big bunch of money up front, and in return for that, Substack keeps a lot of revenue on the back end for that first year.
Right. So I didn't sign a contract. Like I didn't, you know, like I had a conversation basically with some people, and it was kind of like, if I did this, what would it look like? Like what, you know, what kind of resources do I need up front? It was the weirdest sort of like, you know, taking a job kind of thing you could take, because you really like weren't doing it. It was incredibly hands-off. You know, it was like, we'll give you some resources in terms of, you know, best practices, and like they're paying for they're subsidizing some healthcare for me, which is important, but like very hands off.
This is the freedom that's so enticing to so many people, and it's one of the reasons that big names like Glenn Greenwald or advice columnist Heather Havrileski or Slate's own Dear Prudence Danny Lavery have launched their own newsletters. Part of the pitch is that Substack gives writers the infrastructure to publish and process payments. If someone charges for their newsletter, Substack takes a cut, 10%. Other than that, they let writers do what they want and then let the writers' specific audiences find them.
I was talking to somebody who runs a very, very niche technical kind of Substack for a specific industry, and I'm not gonna say who, but they were like, I was never at my old publication allowed to write long explainers about like X technical weird thing. And every time they do it now, their posts go huge, like huge out external traffic. They're beloved by the subscribers. It nets them a ton of paid subscribers. Like they're making great money. And it's this weird thing that's like, this would be sort of the opposite of newsworthiness, you know? So I think what they're doing right is they're like letting people do the thing that they find really interesting and kind of staying out of it to that degree. Also, in some sense, that's why they're in trouble.
Substack's been criticized on two fronts. First, the company is paying several high-profile writers six figures up front in those Substack Pro deals. Other writers who don't get those deals have to build a paying audience themselves without the company cash. The other part of this, though, goes back to the freedom thing. Substack lets controversial people say controversial things about trans issues, feminism, race, and free speech. And controversy gets traffic. The idea is if you're staying out of it, if you're not, say, in there editing, you know, for accountability, say, or letting your creators be kind of as controversial as they want to be, that gets them attention, that's good for the bottom line. But is it, I don't know, capital G good?
Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, I'm very conflicted about a lot of it, right?
And yet you decided to go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a sense, because like I'm going to be accountable to myself in this. Like I'm doing my thing. But I'm really interested in building a community and doing work that is meaningful and helps people understand a lot of these dynamics and forces. I want to build a place for like civil disagreement, for iterative ideas, for, you know, unpacking complex subjects. Like I have this desire to do this thing. And I think that that is a net good for the internet. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to build the internet I want. And I understand that that is requiring me to leverage a platform that has people on it that I don't agree with and who espouse views that I don't agree with. I don't know that you can ever be like perfectly moral on the internet. And so I think that the opportunity for me to build what I want to build, I think that outweighs taking a moral stand on a platform with tens of thousands of people on it.
There's also money in it. If Charlie signs up just 1,000 yearly subscribers, that's $65,000 minus expenses and Substack's cut. And other writers who've moved to Substack are reportedly making well into the six figures. After the break, who has the power here? Creators or platforms?
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not just Substack, of course. In the past few years, there's been an explosion of ways to make money from your personal brand online. Patreon, Tiny Letter, Ghost, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Cameo. So many different platforms to monetize that inner thought, creative choreography, or everyday relatability. There's this concept from the founding editor of Wired, Kevin Kelly, called 1,000 True Fans. And I don't know how familiar you are with this, but I feel like it gets to the heart of what you're doing. And his idea is you don't need millions of dollars, you don't need millions of customers. Like, to make a living as a whatever, you need 1,000 true fans. And those people will follow you and pay for that.
I actually spoke to Kevin about this and sort of like asked him where he thought it was going. And I think he feels pretty vindicated by what's happening right now, because I just think that this creator economy is maturing towards that end, towards, you know, having a small group of people who care a lot about you and who can sort of support your work. I think it's great. I think that it's a sort of a healthier, more sustainable version of the internet. But I also think it is still mediated through platforms.
Well, if you're a creator, what do you do with that? Because even if you're supposedly independent, you can't be utterly divorced from the platform without, you know, showing up at somebody's house and just talking at them.
Yeah. I think you came up with the future, right? It's just like singing telegrams, but with influencers like doing TikTok dances. I've been thinking a little bit about this, but I'm fascinated by the idea that we're probably going to see, not like traditional like unionization, but I think we're going to see some kind of collective creator action in ways that we haven't before at some point. And, you know, because I think that there's a way in which you can kind of tilt your head and squint and look at some of what is happening through these labor lenses. And, you know, you can say like, it's super messed up if, you know, these creators come to this platform, bring just tons of people with them, amass these huge audiences, make these platforms tons of money. And then the platforms say, hey, you know, we're going to tweak this piece of our algorithm and we're going to, you know, cut your revenue by 40%, right? That's like a kind of taxation without representation, right? Like, you didn't agree to those terms. And especially as the income streams diversify and it's maybe less reliant on one platform or the other. When something like that happens, I think you're going to start seeing people band together and say like, hey, you know, I mean, to some degree, we have to go where the eyeballs are. But in another sense, we have a little more power here than we thought.
Charlie has been mulling over the idea that maybe creators could take their 1,000 true fans and refuse to be captive to a platform's recommendation algorithm.
What if a bunch of creators say like, hey, you know what? Like, you have to be transparent about your algorithms or we're leaving. Like, you have to give us some sense of what's going on. And hey, we've banded together and hey, we formed this organization and we're going to take our stuff elsewhere. I just think that it's possible that like some of these issues could get solved that way.
You mentioned this idea of a creator middle class, and it's something that this venture capitalist Li Jin wrote about. You have talked with her about it. And I wonder how we do solve this problem. The idea that there are the people who get the huge payouts up front or the massive subscriber bases. And then, you know, the idea that someone on Spotify needs 3.5 million streams per year to just get the equivalent of minimum wage. Where does the potential middle come from?
I mean, one thing that is just the huge glaring hole in all of this is the blunt American fact that healthcare is tied to your job, tied to employment. Like, it's going to be a massive problem for anyone who wants to create a freelance lifestyle out of this, because then you're going to have to, you know, it's so precarious. And it also is like, it's the big, right? It's the big hurdle preventing lots of people from taking the leap who otherwise, you know, could. This is why I'm really fascinated by the future of this, because I mean, this is like a big industry.
This being creating creators, things on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. And the influencer industry, you know, like I was talking to a person who runs like a big company that tries to like help influencers out of LA, you know, and they're like, it's crazy to watch this play out in like every industry, right? Like the best dental surgeon, right? Like if they have a massive following on TikTok, you know, just showing people with teeth, like it helps their practice, right? Which has nothing to do with being a good creator, but like the influencer world like impacts everything else. Being an influencer is like the number one most desired career right now for like young people. So like, how are we making that sustainable for them? If that is their American dream, quote unquote, and there's a massive hole in it. People who didn't take influencers or creators seriously until pretty recently. People thought of it as like kids dicking around on the internet, right? But I think we're starting to see that it's a viable path for certain people. It's a really desirable path, and it's like not going anywhere.
Do you ever worry that the bottom's going to drop out?
It's scary, right? Like it's, the risk is part of the excitement and part of the reason to do it. There's two ways of looking at it right now. One is that like, I do think there is going to be a certain point where people are like, I can't pay, you know, $700 a month for a whole bunch of journalists. And like, then they will look over at something like the New York Times and be like, oh, you employ 1,400 journalists and it costs me $5.99 a month. Like, that's a pretty good deal. So I get that. And I think that that could happen. But also I think that most like human beings out in the world probably don't subscribe to a single Substack and probably barely know what it is.
When and how are you going to know if this is working?
I mean, one is obviously like checking in after a year, but I don't think that this is ever going to be a failure. And the reason why I say that is like right now I'm building out an email list. Like I'm building out a group of people who care about this, and I'm going to work my ass off to continue to be in conversation with them and build their trust. And that relationship isn't going to go away because I didn't make a lot of money. Because I'm not in it to become, you know, a mega millionaire or something like that, or the king of my content empire. Because I'm in it because I want to deepen my relationship with people who care about the things that I care about. I don't know that I can fail in that specific way, like fully fail.
Charlie Warzel, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie Warzel writes the newsletter Galaxy Brain. All right, that's the show. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks and edited by Allison Benedict and Tori Bosch. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family, and it's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. I want to recommend you go back and listen to Thursday's episode of What Next. It helped me understand the concerns around the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine and put them in context. All right, What Next? We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
a state senator from California, watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotarucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.